Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 178. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is not with me right now. He is back home in Las Vegas, the steaming hot Las Vegas, Nevada right now, waiting for summer to get over. I'm telling you, man, when I left earlier this week, it's still like 100 degrees at midnight, man. It is brutal. Ready for summer to get over, man. Better days are coming. I, meanwhile, am in Lincoln, Nebraska for UFC Fight Night 135, Gaethje versus Vic, hanging out at the host hotel right now, the beautiful Lincoln Marriott Cornhusker Hotel, downtown Lincoln, Nebraska, just around the corner from the state capitol, just around the corner from the University of Nebraska as well. So kind of a college town, a small town to say the least. I actually flew into Omaha and drove here from Omaha, took an Uber from Omaha, and thought I was going to be kind of like ridiculous. And bottom line, I was just being a mileage whore, man. I wanted to be on American Airlines and get my miles and get my upgrades because I'm a mileage whore like that. But a lot of other people did the same thing. This is a really small airport here, and so the cities that are the number of flights that you have available and the cities you can fly from, not a lot of big choices. So yeah, actually flew into Omaha, Nebraska, and then took about an hour Uber up here to Lincoln. So it's a small town. It's definitely been a little bit quiet here in the downtown area. The students are just making their way back to school, I guess. Unfortunately, not here for a football weekend. We're right around the corner from the big stadium, huge stadium. Of course, I don't think Nebraska quite the powerhouse that they were at one time. I remember when I was a kid, it was a solid football program, of course. And I guess fun fact that has been verified, when that stadium, which I think the stadium holds around 100,000 people or so, and when it's full to capacity, that stadium alone would qualify as the third biggest city in the state of Nebraska. So pretty crazy to put that in perspective. And a little personal tie here to Lincoln. My granny was born in Lincoln. She has since left this world, but she was a huge part of my upbringing, to say the least. So shout out to Granny. Happy I could be here. Beautiful weather here in Lincoln, Nebraska. It's been a good week so far. Sitting down on a Thursday night, as we always do, to do the MMA Roadshow. Turnout has been good. Local media, we had, you know, I came in on Wednesday, did some interviews. All those are up on YouTube. If you want to check those out, they're up on MMA Junkie as well. But did a handful of interviews, sat down with eight different fighters. And so that was just me kind of rolling solo. Then today, this morning, was the media day. And I'll be honest, I really wasn't expecting a huge turnout. I mean, this is, again, a rather small town, but hey, there were probably a good six or seven cameras maybe at the media day today. A little bit of traveling media. None of the national sites other than us are here, but some traveling media from the area, surrounding areas, and then the locals showed up as well. So definitely nice to see the turnout. They were certainly most interested in Jake Ellenberger, and by proxy, I guess, Brian Barberina as well. Got kind of a lengthy scrum also because he's fighting him. But, you know, Jake's the local boy, so they're certainly always looking for the local ties. I mean, they definitely spoke to Justin Gaethje and James Vick as well. But their keen interest was in Jake Ellenberger. So a big draw here for him. We'll talk more about that fight later. But good turnout by the local media. So that's been interesting to see. The arena that we're going to be at, Pinnacle Bank Arena, of course, this is the first time for the UFC in Lincoln. So I've never set foot in that facility. But it's only 5 years old. It's I guess, you know, built as primarily the home of the basketball team here, but of course does, you know, concerts and whatever else as well. But a big building, man. It seats, you know, a good 15,000 people or so. It's only 5 years old, so, you know, modern amenities. So anxious to get in there and check it out. But as far as, you know, attendance and that sort of thing is what we're expecting. You know, it's going to be one of those lower bowl only type shows. You know, it's kind of what you expect on fight nights. It's interesting, man. You know, the UFC does like to play these big venues, but, you know, for fight night events, they're not expecting to go in there and sell 10, 12, 14, 16,000 tickets. So they scale down the building a little bit, wisely, as you should. But it is interesting. You know, you compare and contrast. You know, it's fun to go back and forth between the promotions. But when you see, you know, Bellator's frame of mind. You know, they'd rather play a 3,000 seat venue and sell it out, you know, and have it look good on TV and you know, maybe have the costs a little bit lower of not having that big venue. Whereas the UFC likes to play the bigger venues. Of course, you know, the bigger venues will pay money, or you know, at least offer some concessions to the UFC because you know, it is such a you know, a high visibility tenant. You know, you look at like you know, going to Moncton or whatever. I mean, why did the UFC pick Moncton? Because it's a brand new venue, and I'm sure there was some kind of deal between the city or the venue itself. And these are things that happen behind the scenes that we often don't think about as mixed martial arts fans, and how the UFC or any other promotion for that matter picks out their schedule. So kind of interesting to see, but that's kind of what the expectations are. Sounds like the local interest has been pretty good so far this week. But definitely don't expect you know, 15,000 people to be in there on Saturday night. It's a fight night crowd, and they're expecting a fight night crowd. Listen, let's just get into media today, all right? Justin Gaethje, first of all, the interview. I did speak to him, and if you want to go check it out, now I maybe I'm being a little self-conscious or worried. But go check out the interview if you want that him and I did together. Here's what happened. I get to Lincoln. My room's not ready yet. I get here first thing in the morning, so I just go to the press room. You know, I've still got all my luggage and everything, and I sat down, and I just kind of hang out and finish up my notes and finish up some emails and stuff like that. Anyway, Justin Gaethje comes in. Now it's not our time to talk. We're not supposed to talk for another 4 hours or so. But he walks in. And he's got some radio interviews to do with some other people. And, you know, I'm, hey, Justin, how you doing? And first thing he says to me is, John Morgan, picking James Vick, I'm going to knock him out just for you. Just for you. I'm going to knock him out. You know, kind of being a little sarcastic or what have you. And, you know, but in good spirits. Definitely in good spirits. He was smiling and laughing. And then he gave some great interviews on the radio, which were awesome. You know, he was talking about, you know, everything under the sun, how much he likes to golf, how much he likes to go to the casinos and gamble a little bit and have some fun. And, you know, that's a perfect day for him as a, you know, maybe morning on the golf course and afternoon in the casinos. So anyway, he's in good spirits, right? Well, he comes back to see me a few hours later, and I still think he's in good spirits, but I think he was a little upset with me. I think he was a little standoffish. I think he was not necessarily wanting to talk to me. I mean, didn't protest, you know, he was polite about it, but I felt like he might have had a little chip on his shoulder. And I'll be honest, I did pick against him in our staff picks, but our staff picks don't even get published until Friday morning. So I don't know. I did a couple interviews, and maybe he heard something or saw something else, or Cold Coffee brought this up. Maybe he was just bluffing me. We know he likes to go to the casinos. He talked about it. Maybe he was just bluffing me to see, like, oh, I bet you're picking against me. And I was honest, because I don't see any reason to lie to him. But maybe he was just bluffing me, and then I gave in to him, and I gave him the intel that he was looking for, and that's when he got the chip on his shoulder. I don't know. But I think Justin was a little bit mad at me. But I love this fight, man. I really do love this fight. Justin Gaethje is, you know, as anybody knows that's been listening to this podcast for a long time or just has you know, stayed in touch, I love Justin Gaethje. His World Series of Fighting run, I mean, I thought he was must-watch television back then, and now he's facing the sport's best on the highest stage. And yes, he's come up short a couple of times. But, dude, when he's in there, you want to see him fight. And that's why, even on two losses, you give him a main event. And nobody – did anyone protest? I sure didn't. I didn't hear any protests whatsoever. And I that's why he's in this position. But you can tell, I think he's, I don't want to say on edge. You know, I think he's tired of answering the questions. I think he's tired of answering, you know, what about these losses? I think he's tired of hearing about, will you change your style? I think he's tired of hearing about all that. And I think he really wants to win. You know, he really, really wants to win here. And in the past, you know, he said, hey, I'm a prize fighter. I'm here to make money. But, you know, he wants to be a champion as well. And I think he realizes this is a very important fight. So here's what I'm going to do. I want you to hear the media day scrum. Now, it's still a lot of my questions. Again, there were some local media, which was a good turnout, but, you know, they don't know the sport that well. They're there to really just kind of collect, you know, quotes and that sort of thing and just use what they can. So it's mainly my questions. But I want you to hear a little bit here of Justin Gaethje and what he had to say today at Media Day.
Well, Justin, I know you're not a big fan of James as a person and some of the things he says. What about as a fighter? I mean, are there things that you look at him that you admire?
No, I don't admire anything about his fighting style. Point fighter, constantly going backwards. But, you know, he's ranked number 10 in the UFC, so he's definitely it's going to be a big challenge for me. I got to go out there, I got to get a W, be a little bit more patient than normal, pick my shots. He doesn't like to get hit. He gets hit going backwards, and that's the worst way to get hit. So when I do touch him, he's gonna feel it. He's going to not like it.
Do you feel like there's anything that he does specifically that you do have to concern yourself with, that you have to watch out for, the position you don't want to be in, or, you know,
right? Yeah, he's got good Darce chokes, good guillotine chokes. I don't need to stick my neck in there and, you know, get caught one of those.
And I know you're talking about, you know, being a little more patient, but I got to ask you, if you had the choice of going in there, one punch knockout and being done in 10 seconds, or having a back and forth 5-round brawl like we know you can, and walking away with $100,000 in bonus checks, which one would you do?
I'll take the one punch knockout and take my 50 grand and be happy with that. If he can last 8 minutes, he gets 50 grand too.
Is it easier to get motivated for a fight after all the trash talking compared to previous times when you fought Alvarez and Dustin?
No, I'm a competitor, and I've lost two in a row, so I don't need any extra motivation right now. I need to go out there and I need to prove to myself, prove to the world that I, you know, Eddie Alvarez, just, I can't say it enough, the two of the best in the world in the lightweight division. I was right there. You know, my life would be a lot different right now if I got those W's, but I did not. That's the way it goes, and I'm, you know, content with the way those fights went. Those are the way I wanted to fight those fights. Those are the game plan I went in to fight those fights with those guys. So yeah, I mean, I don't regret anything I've done. Yeah, I could have taken him down maybe once or twice, but this isn't the fight to go out there and again stick my neck in there and you know get Darce choked or even get stuck in that position.
That being said, does your fighting style change at all, or do you use more of a wrestling going into this?
No, I don't know. I have no idea. I go in there. I mean, I'm definitely gonna put pressure on him. I'm gonna pressure him with my feet. I don't necessarily need to throw as much, but I'm going to pressure him with my feet. He's going to be constantly going backwards, which is a given with James. So yeah, it's going to be a tough fight to figure out. You know, I got to go in there. I got to figure it out at the beginning. I'm not going to go in there and, 6'3", it's not something normal. It's not something I'm used to. So it will be something I need to go out there. I need to feel it out and figure it out.
How do you train for 6'3"? Do you?
Oh, he's trained with a lot of big guys. Yeah, I mean, a lot of 85ers, a lot of 70s, a lot of 70-pounders. Went to Vegas for a week, trained with Extreme Couture. I've been training with the Elevation Fight Team in Denver. So, you know, they got Neil Magny. They got a bunch of tall guys there.
I guess in any of your fights so far, like you're wrestling, you're All-American, you know, you got UNC, and you haven't, you know, you're been straight boxing, go for the knockout.
Yeah, I mean,
is that after these losses to Eddie and Dustin, I know against Michael and knocked him out, but is your mindset and your thought process in the ring change a little bit as you enter this fight as far as, you know, not having maybe your chin out there a little bit as much and going for that knockout right away?
Yeah, I never have my chin out there. I mean, if I am going to take a punch, I'm aiming to take it on the forehead. But I've used my wrestling in every single fight. Every single one of those guys tried to take me down and they couldn't. I scrambled out of each and every takedown that they attempted. So that's what I do. That's how I wrestled.
Okay. And I mean, some wrestlers depend on ground pound a little more. I mean, do you see yourself maybe thinking that?
No idea.
Possibility?
I don't know, guys. It's a fight. You guys, if you've ever been in there, if you have a lot of plans, then you're an idiot because shit will hit the fan real quick. Especially when you're counting on something and it doesn't happen, then what do? You know, do you have a plan B? Do you have a plan C? It's too much thinking. I go in there, I react, I fight off my reactions. I believe my timing is the best. That's what I fight off of, intuition. I've trained my whole life for this. 4 years old, I started training, in hindsight for this, for August 25th, first James Vick. The last two fights, I can't harp on it enough. I was right there. I had a bolt hurt. I had a bolt on the ropes. I just became complacent in my position. I thought I had him more hurt than I guess I did. Dustin, like I said, I went out there. I tried to, you know, coming off the stool in the fourth round, I was like, I just got to kick this guy two or three more times and he's done. And, you know, I forgot that I'm fighting the best in the world. I didn't forget, but became complacent.
Justin Gaethje breaking things down before his fight. And I tell you what, man, as we're getting close to this fight, now again, if you want to watch the one-on-one interview I had with him, that's on YouTube. It's on MMA Junkie as well. But listening to him yesterday, listening to him today, I don't think he's going to change his approach at all in this fight. You know, he does say be a little bit more cautious, a little bit more patient, so maybe that counts as a change. But, you know, everybody's saying, is he going to wrestle more? Is he going to wrestle more? I don't think so. You know, with him saying, you know, specifically, look, this isn't the fight to go out there and stick my neck out and get darsed. I just don't think that he's going to try to implement a heavy wrestling style. And again, he talks about how James Vick is always backing up and is a point fighter and isn't looking to engage. You know, it sounds to me like Justin's going to be aggressive. Like he feels like he's going to have to push forward, that he's going to have to kind of make the fight happen, so to speak. So I don't think we're going to see changes from Justin Gaethje like everybody is thinking. Now, that doesn't mean that we won't down the road, and that doesn't mean that he can't win with his style, because his leg kicks are nasty, his power is impressive, and you know, if he can get Justin, or excuse me, if he can get James to back up, you know, to the fence or what have you, and unleash. I mean, there's a lot of things that Justin Gaethje can do here. He's dangerous, and this fight is a 50-50 fight to me, man. It really is. I ended up leaning towards James Vick in our staff picks, but I was torn. So, but if you're still trying to break it down, if you're still weighing it out in your head, you know, it looks like that she's, you know, not willing to change anything in terms of the wrestling. And I think, you know, while he may have kind of suggested that he would to some degree, I think he's now committed to the fact that, you know, tipping his hand a little bit and saying he's not. So I do love the fact, too, that he admits, hey, man, if I do get punched, I'm trying to take it on the forehead. You know, he said that before, but I love that. And it's true, man. If you can get punched in the forehead, you know, it's not the chin. It doesn't knock you out. It can certainly cause some equilibrium. And there's a better chance of people, you know, breaking their hands as well. So, you know, but it always makes you laugh to hear it. And I will say, too, Justin makes some great points. And, again, I think he's a little bit annoyed in answering the questions. I think he's a little bit annoyed of having to kind of deal with it and deal with the talk of the losses, but his points in saying, hey, listen, you know, I was fighting world-class guys, top-level guys, and I had them hurt. You know, I was close. So it's not like I was getting blown out of the water and I don't belong at the upper echelon anymore. No, absolutely. He's not saying that at all. You know, he's saying, listen, I was there. I was right there. And in fact, you know, had a chance to win these fights, and it just went wrong. So he's not taking away from those guys or making excuses, but saying, hey, listen, when you're evaluating me, remember that I was competing with these guys and almost had them beat. And that's true. You know, sometimes you just look at the losses and you go, ah, man, you know, is he a little bit shop-worn at this point? You know, are these battles starting to add up? And, yeah, man. Maybe they are, maybe they aren't. You know, is he a little bit more chinny? Is he a little bit more suspect? You can't fight like that forever. We've always said that. Even in World Series of Fighting, we've said that. But he's saying, listen, I'm still there, and I almost won these fights. So it's interesting. I love this main event. The main event is going to be all action, but I love the fact that there's, you know, a lot at stake for these guys, and I think they're both kind of at different points. All right, meanwhile, you got James Vick, who he's been – you know, I don't want to say begging for this opportunity, but saying for quite some time, like, hey, what about me? You know, I know you got these guys out there, but what about me? I have earned the right to face some of these top-tier people. And he's getting that opportunity now, and I think he's happy with it. You know, he said, listen, I'm in a main event. I'm getting to fight somebody that's solid. Now, these two guys, you know, clearly don't like each other that much. Clearly they've had a lot of going on back and forth. Gaethje seems to have a little bit more disdain for Vick than the other way around, but Vick has, you know, been pretty personal with those, the human punching bag comments and the, you know, the Homer Simpson stuff, and yeah. So it is turning into a little bit of rivalry. I can say, you know, UFC staff is always professional about making sure that guys aren't in the same place. They're really good about doing that. I mean, you see the occasional clip here and there online where things just happen and people cross paths, but UFC staff is always very, very good about scheduling things so that opponents aren't near each other in the same place for any reason, you know, other than sheer coincidence and sheer free will. They don't schedule them to be in the same area. And there was a possibility the other day, because of some kind of late shuffling that was going on, that they were going to be in the same area at the same time. And the operations team was kind of like, well, they're both professionals and maybe it'll be okay. And somebody immediately said, nope. Have you heard these guys talking to each other? Like, no. Let's not have these guys anywhere near each other. We'll wait until it's time to face off. So they have kept them apart. And, again, I think this is going to be a good fight. But I think there's real meaning to this fight as well. Yes, it's not a number one contender fight. But it's certainly meaningful for each of these guys in their personal journeys, as well as, you know, some future standings in the lightweight division. So James Vick was the next one to come speak to us. And a couple things I want to talk to you about with this, but what we'll do first is let you hear the James Vick. Now, if you know James Vick, his weight cuts are not good, man. He never looks good the day before weigh-ins and at weigh-ins. His voice changes tremendously, very, very noticeably. When he's going through his weight cuts, and that certainly happened here. So listen to James Vick first, and then we'll share a couple other things that happened behind the scenes.
The most important question we got to know, are there any Vick's picks outside of the main event? I mean, have you been breaking down the rest of this card?
You know, I haven't went in super deep on the card. I haven't decided, honestly. I'll release them Saturday.
Nice.
Check my Twitter.
Have you made the move on you, or are you still monitoring the line?
No, I'm waiting for the line to drop. When the line comes down, I'm betting the house. It's coming down slowly. I see it. It's coming down. So since I look all skinny and always at weigh-ins, hopefully people are like, oh, you know, everyone thinks, oh, he had a bad weight cut, then it'll come down even more. That's the plan.
You do always look rough on weight cuts. How are you feeling right now?
I mean, I it sucks. It's never good, but, I mean, it's not any worse or better than usual. It's basically the same as always.
How much further do you have to go?
I only got five and a half pounds left, so I'll do like three more tonight, and then maybe two and a half in the morning.
When you get to these moments, do you think, I'm not long for 155 anymore? I'm too tall. I'm too big. I got to maybe move up.
Well, you always think that, and then they write that check, and then I'm like, okay, I can do this again. Honestly, a lot of my stuff comes from my diet. Honestly, I have a bad diet. You know, I'm not even going to lie. You know, if I'm not quite as big as people think I am, I'm very tall, but my bone structure is very small. I eat a lot of sugar, man. I'm a sugar addict, like literally, like it's a problem. So if I cut down on that, I'd probably walk around a good 10, 15 pounds lighter than what I naturally do.
So, if 165 ever did come around, would you be like one of the first ones with your hand in the air?
Oh, for sure.
Do you ever consider 170?
Oh, yeah. I mean, my goal is to become a world champion, you know, defend it a couple times and then move up.
Nice.
But right now, I'd have to start all over if I did that. You know, if I move up right now, I got to start back at ground zero.
Last thing for me, I want to ask you what you think about Justin's kind of rhetoric he's thrown out there this week that, you know, you can't go through the test that he has. Yes, he's got some losses, but, you know, those guys were top of the food chain and they dug deep, and you don't have that within you as your character.
What would name one fight that I've given up in? Even the fight that I lost to Benil Dariush, I went out like a fucking warrior. I got knocked the fuck out, but I didn't give up and I didn't quit. You know what I'm saying? My body wouldn't function anymore, but I fucking kept fighting, you know. Name one fight I've given up on. He's delusional. Everybody in the top echelon of the UFC has heart. All of us have heart. Why do you think we're here? So he's making a serious mistake if he believes that. He's also making a serious mistake if he thinks that I'm not ready for that war. He thinks that I believe I could avoid that war. I know I might not be able to avoid it. I could go in there and knock him out quick and catch him quick, but I might not, and I'm fully aware and mentally prepared for all that.
So when he says that he doesn't like your character, you run from a fight, you avoid things, does that bug you to hear him say that?
No, he's an idiot. I don't really care, to be honest with you. Sorry, I'm sweating. I literally just left the sauna.
So the Homer Simpson comments, man, where did those come from? That's hilarious.
I mean, it's kind of, I mean, just being honest. I mean, look at the guy fights like that. Just being honest.
Does that animosity or, like, the fact that he reacted to those comments might play into the fight, or your game plan is the same regardless?
I think he's going to fight the way he fights regardless. It didn't really matter, you know? Like, I don't really think there's much I can, you know, no matter what I say or what he says, he's going to fight the way he fights.
There has been a lot of talk going back and forth, you know, with you guys as the fight's getting closer. But are you just happy that you finally got an opportunity, and a professional guy?
For sure. You know, I've worked my entire life to get here. You know, this is going to change my life Saturday night. For sure.
Last time we talked, you know, it was right after you accepted the fight in Maryland and flew in. How have things kind of changed for you over that course in the last, you know, 2 months, 2.5 months?
Nothing's really changed. I mean, I went home for a little bit, you know, between fights, between camps, and then came back and started training. Sorry, y'all. I just let the sun, so I'm sweating.
What were the Homer Simpson comments? I apologize. I missed that, but you could.
Well, he just, you know, the dude takes beatings. Have you ever watched the episode of The Simpsons where Homer gets the shit beat out of him? He looks like Gaethje.
All right, so you hear James Vick. Of course, he's a little upset at the storyline that has been tossed out there by Justin Gaethje that, you know, Vick's not ready for this test, that he's not being able to handle the pressure that's going to be coming his way. But I want to share you some things, and you may have seen the video. Again, the video of that is on YouTube and will be on MMA Junkie soon if it's not there already. But if you heard some ruffling in the audio, that's James Vick kind of holding the mic stand that we use and moving it back and forth. He was a little bit fidgety, man. He was moving around a little bit, and he looked bad. I mean, it's just – the thing is, he admits it. I mean, it's not abnormal. He looks very, very skinny, like bad every time he weighs in. And it is a little bit jarring. But I will say this from standing next to him, and you can see it a little bit in the video, and he even mentions it there in the audio. He was sweating a lot. I mean, profusely. And he said he had just come from the sauna. You know, that was the schedule he was on. There was a lot of water coming out of him. So that's good. I mean, that means if he's sweating, that's what you like to see, man. When somebody's trying to cut weight and there's no sweat coming out at all, that's a bad thing. You know, that's obviously the sure sign of dehydration. But it is a little interesting. He, at the end, he kind of, you know, we kind of told, you know, he said, like, I'm sorry, I'm sweating. And we kind of told him he could go. And I don't know if he just didn't hear us or, you know, he was focused on himself at that minute, but he at the end of that interview, basically, he sat down and he was like, hey, can somebody get me a towel? And to be honest, I quit shooting at that time because I felt like he was getting a little lightheaded or something. But in retrospect, because he waited and there were no towels around in the little press room where we are. So one of the PR team kind of ran to one of the other rooms, the workout rooms, and brought him back a towel. But it took a minute or two to sprint over there to the other area, get the towel, and bring it back. And during that time, James was kind of sitting there and kind of had his head in his hands a little bit. You know, he was basically just wiping his forehead. It didn't look like he was lightheaded, like he was going to pass out or anything like that. But I didn't know if maybe he wasn't feeling good, and so that's why he kind of sat down right next to where we were doing the interview. I don't know. Maybe I should have kept rolling, but it was one of those deals where I shut the camera off because I had the feeling like he was kind of done. He needed a second, and he joked during it. He actually did joke. He said, "You know, hey, listen, you know, I know the fact that I look bad is good for me." You know, he jokes about gambling, and well, he doesn't joke about gambling. He likes to bet money on fights and not just his own. But he's talked about betting the house on him, and he said, "This is good, man. People are gonna think I look like crap, so the odds are gonna go down." So he was definitely alert and joking, but it was a little bit, I don't know, it concerned me for a second. And then once he got the towel, he wiped himself off a little bit, and he stood back up to continue the interview. So at that point, I thought, okay, well, maybe there was nothing wrong with him. So he was like, okay, let's keep going, and we were like, oh no, you're good. We got no more questions where you're good. So maybe, you know, the only reason he sat down and was trying to wipe himself was he just was either embarrassed or frustrated by all the sweat that was coming off of him and wanted to get that dried up before he continued the interview. So maybe there was nothing wrong with him, but I don't know. It was just one of those weird moments that I'll think back, you know, after the fight one way or the other, and I feel like I'll have the answer. You know, either he will look bad and we'll go, man, that was a telling moment, you know, that the weight cut wasn't going great. Or he'll look phenomenal and be like, okay, so he really wasn't okay. But, you know, just one of those interesting moments. He joked about it, and he was professional about it, and I think he was okay, but it was weird. It will, if you haven't seen him weigh in before, man. There's just official weigh-ins for Friday, so we'll have full coverage of that, of course. I'll stream it, and then we'll have highlights of it as well, and then they'll do the face-offs right after. But, yeah, if you haven't seen a James Vick weigh in before, it's always a little bit scary. So, yeah, that's the main event. I think it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be a good fight, and I think it's meaningful for both those guys. The co-main event, I love it as well. I do. I really do. Michael Johnson versus Andre Feely. And I love it again. I mean, I love these fights that have meaning for these fighters. And I get it. It may not be, you know, we're not lining up any contenders for the title. You know, Max Holloway and Brian Ortega aren't watching this fight and you know, hoping that their plans don't change for the fall or whatever. Okay, that's not what this is. But these are two guys who are certainly personable dudes, and certainly have shown moments of greatness in the cage. And they both need a win, you know, they for different reasons. Michael Johnson has had this; he's in a terrible stretch right now. 1-4, you know, was winning his last fight out, but ended up losing to Darren Elkins. You know, the comeback kid. Or I don't know if you can call him a kid anymore, but you know the comeback specialist that he is, losing to Darren Elkins. Meanwhile, Andre Feely, you know, always been one of those kind of highly touted Team Alpha Male guys and has had some great moments, but has also had some failures and has struggled to gain consistency. And so he wants to get a win to prove that, you know, hey, listen, I've been in the UFC for a while now, and I'm ready to contend. I'm ready to be a relevant player in this division, not just somebody that has a funny nickname and some cool tattoos. He wants to matter in the division. So first up was Michael Johnson. We spoke to Michael Johnson, and, you know, you have to ask him. I mean, what's it like for him? Because I think Michael Johnson is incredibly talented. I really do. We've seen some great things out of him. We've seen some great moments out of him. And again, the last fight, man, he looked good against Darren Elkins, but he ended up losing the fight. You know, it's you know, people always talk about him with Khabib Nurmagomedov. You know, Khabib Nurmagomedov, you know, he touched up Khabib, right? I mean, that's what a lot of the reason people are saying that Conor McGregor has a real good chance against Khabib, because they point to the Michael Johnson fight and they say, look, you know, Michael Johnson's not that level of striker, and he touched him up a little bit. Of course, then you had the amazing fight with Justin Gaethje as well, and Michael Johnson. That I mean, just incredible stuff from both those guys. So, yeah, I mean, Michael Johnson, and I said 1-4. I apologize. 1-5 is the stretch that he's in right now. Man, tough spot. You know that he's got the skills to compete, and you know he's got the athletic gifts to compete, but he's hit some roadblocks along the way. So, had to ask Michael Johnson about that, what the mindset is like, you know, what this means to him. And here's what he had to say.
Michael, talk to us what the mindset's like for you, man. I mean, the stress that you're having to deal with, you know you're a talented guy, you know you can compete with the best in the world, but you just haven't been getting the results. What's the mindset been like for you?
You know what, man, my mindset, my last few fights, I just, I haven't been fully focused enough, you know, and that's what it is. But now this training camp, you know, I've been really focusing just me, you know, taking my time, really focusing on what I need to do. And, you know, just speaking everything in existence. You know, I know how great I am. You know, I know I'm better than these guys I'm fighting. I know I'm better than these guys I'm losing to. I just need to stay focused for 15 minutes, 25 minutes, whatever it is, and get back on the winning track, because, fuck, I really miss that feeling. You know, it's especially when you're beating these guys and end up losing. You know, there's no worse way to lose than that.
I was going to say, I mean, Darren has kind of made it famous for having comebacks like that, right? But so is that the lesson you take, is that you like mentally weren't there for a second, and that's when he was able to get the position?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, I got a stupid kick. I slipped and fell, and then kind of froze up a little bit, and then I tried to rush the situation, and it's just me in there taking my time and not thinking. You know, so I just have to trust myself. I have to trust my training, and trust that I know I have the ability to get out of these positions and just be calm and cool in there.
Nice. Talk about the decision to stay at featherweight. I mean, is this your division? Because I wonder, you know, when you didn't win, if you think, man, that weight cut wasn't worth it. I didn't get a win. I might as well go back up to lightweight. So did you consider it all, and what made you say, no, I'm staying at featherweight?
Yeah, I considered going back up, but, you know, everybody knows how stubborn I am in this sport. So I was like, nah, hell no, I'm not going back up. I got to get another win. So I'm going to put myself through the torture of getting down to 45 again. And, you know, I can't just go into a division and run away after another loss. You know, that's not me. You know, I want to show everybody that, hey, I'm here. I can't compete with these guys, and I'm going to come take this division over and come back up and finish what I started at lightweight.
So you plan on going back there at some point?
Oh, yes. You know, I definitely want to see, you know, I've beaten two of the guys in the top five. You know, I've been beating all the guys in the top 10, so it's no reason for me to run away. I just wanted some new faces and a change of scenery.
What do you think about this matchup with Feely?
It's a great matchup. You know, Philly's, he's a great, talented guy. He comes from a great gym. It's my third time fighting him, so, you know, that'd be fun. And, you know, he gets in there and he bangs, you know, so it's going to be very talented. He's definitely underestimating me. I've been hearing around here, so that's a bad thing for him. He's a fucking idiot if he's doing that.
Hey, lastly for me, I want to ask, I mean, does this feel, I don't sound like a crossroads, but it's weird. I mean, like I said, I mean, you've competed with the best in the world. You've been beating the best in the world, you know. But you got to get the wins, right? I mean, does this feel like a very important moment that you've got to prove that you still, I guess, belong?
Yeah, absolutely. It is. You know, I'm no idiot. You know, it's a business. and you're only as good as what you're producing and what you're putting out. And I'm fighting on three fight losing streak, regardless of if I was winning them before, regardless of how I'm doing. You know, that's just life, and that's how it is. So I have to come up, I have to compete, and I have to get this win. You know, I will get this win.
Do you think that Billy feels that he has the advantage because you fought guys from before? Like, do you think they feel they have figured you out?
They might think they figured me out, but like I said, we're 1-1, and I was beating the last guy's ass until I made a simple mistake, and he just jumped on my back. You know, I knocked their coach out, so I don't see where he has the advantage or where he thinks he has the advantage. But he's definitely underestimating me. He thinks it's his time. You know, he thinks I've came and gone already. But no, this is my second breath. I'm in it to win it right now. I'm fully focused, and you guys are gonna see the old Michael Johnson in there.
Knowing that you're still paying attention to lightweight, what do you think about this main event?
It's going to be a good main event. I'm excited to watch it, you know, but like I said, I've been so focused on myself and everything. I damn near don't even know who fights in the UFC anymore. I've been so focused on me, so, you know, here we are.
You've been through a murderer's row, man. I mean, Elkins, Gaethje, Nemir Madoff, Poirier. What do you think Fury rates with the guys you faced recently?
You know, I don't look at my past fights. You know, I don't look at who I fought. I don't try to compare them to Andre Fili, because when it all said and done, Andre Fili is the toughest guy I'm going to face because I fight him Saturday night. You know, that's the only thing I'm focused on right now. So I'm not trying to compare him to Diaz or Poirier or any of those guys. You know, Andre Fili's the topic and he's the objective.
There are a million things demanding your time. Contact lenses shouldn't be one of them. That's why we're excited about a great new company called Simple Contacts that is making the process of renewing your prescription and buying contacts, well, simple. Simple Contacts is the most convenient way to get your contact lens prescription renewed and stock up on your brand of contacts. Get this. Instead of taking time off and spending hours at the doctor just to renew your prescription, you can now do it online in under 5 minutes. This is vision care for the 21st century. Here's how it works. You take a quick self-guided vision test from your phone or computer. It's reviewed by a licensed doctor in 24 hours. You receive a renewed prescription and reorder your brand of contacts. So simple. If you have an unexpired prescription, you can use them too. Just upload a photo of it or your doctor's info and order your lenses in minutes for a great price. They do all the hard work for you. Buying more contacts has never been easier, and why should it be hard in the first place, right? That's why Simple Contacts was created. Simple Contacts offers every brand of lenses, and their prices are unbeatable. Plus, the prescription is just $20. Compare that with an annual appointment, which can be up to $200 without insurance. Shipping is free, and best of all, our listeners get $20 off their first Simple Contact order. To save $20 on your lenses, just go to simplecontacts.com/road20 or enter the code road20 at checkout. I want to mention that this isn't a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam. You still need those occasionally, but it is the most convenient way to renew a prescription and reorder your contacts. Again, check out Simple Contacts and get $20 off by going to simplecontacts.com/road20. That's R-O-A-D and the numbers 20. Or just enter the code road20 at checkout. Save yourself time, money, and a headache with Simple Contacts.
The menace, Michael Johnson. I like what he's saying. You know, focus. It's all about mental focus. And I think he's dead on. I think he's right, man. He's got the skills. He's got the gifts. It's mental focus, right? It's not making those mistakes. Staying focused the entire 15 minutes. Not having those mental errors. I think he's dead right about that. And if he can do that, he can be a real, real problem in the division. So I like what I'm hearing. Again, I love this fight, and I like what I'm hearing from Michael Johnson. If you like what you're hearing, you know what you can do? You can do us a favor. Make sure that you log into iTunes and take just a couple of seconds to leave us a review. Make sure you rate us. Hopefully you can give us 5 stars. Leave us a review as well. Make sure you're subscribed, of course. You want to get that done. And hell, maybe even tell somebody else to subscribe. But leave us some feedback. I love reading it. Like this from a man, CD Busy. He left us 5 stars, said, love this MMA podcast. One of my favorite MMA podcasts. John Morgan's the man. Thank you, brother. Keep up the awesome work. Thank you. Thank you, sir. You can also, if you have some constructive criticism, I'm okay with that. You can be like my man Matt Edge. He gave us 4 stars, and he said inconsistency. So let me start by saying I love this podcast. It would be an easy 5 stars if not for the inconsistency of episodes. One of the main reasons I started listening was for the and a half episodes. It is a perfect first-person experience of the fights and behind-the-scenes things people who didn't attend wouldn't know about in a laid-back, crack-open-a-frosty beverage kind of dynamic. I love the addition of cold coffee, too, even when its power won't stay on. I just wish they gave us some notice, being a tweet or whatever, to expect or not to expect an episode. You know what, Matt? That's fair feedback, man. I respect that. You're right. In a perfect world, man, and a half episodes would be every single week. And I want to get to the point that they are, but it is tough sometimes. Of course, a lot of responsibilities at MMA Junkie that have to be handled first, because that is, of course, what pays the bills. And sometimes it's just practicality. For instance, here, you know, my flight leaves Sunday morning from Omaha, so I got to drive from Lincoln to Omaha, and I'm going to take an Uber at 7:10 in the morning. And, of course, the fights are going to end, I don't know, probably like 1:30, 2 o'clock by the time we get done with everything. Got to get back. It's tough. I'm saying it's a challenge, but it's not a challenge that I don't want to meet. And, in fact, I've even thought about just moving the podcast from recording on Thursdays to – you know, recording on basically post fights, you know, because I know, to be honest, as a fan, I would love that too. That's the reason I want to do the and a half episodes, because as a fan, that's what I want to listen to as well. Like, you know, get a little bit of those notes from behind the scenes, talk about what just happened. So I've even thought about just moving the podcast there and doing it that night of the week instead. And, you know, then maybe we could schedule structure change a little bit. So I don't know. Good points. I will say, though, don't say inconsistency. That's why it's and a half. 178 straight weeks, my friend. 178 straight weeks. Have never missed a single week of an episode since we started. Even through vacations, even through all that, we've so I would say, sir, that we are as consistent as anybody in the business, except maybe with the and a half episodes. So I feel you. I like it. All right. Much respect to both of you for that feedback. Hopefully, everybody else will log in and hopefully give us 5 stars and leave us some feedback, good or bad, either way. All right, let's talk about Andre Feely as well. Andre, touchy Feely. Listen, I love talking to him as well, man. The guy's attitude is phenomenal. And again, you know, he's shown moments of brilliance in the cage, but he's also had some inconsistent results as well. And he believes, listen, I'm getting older, you know what I mean? And it's time for me to deliver. It's not time for me to live on promise or to live on potential of what I can be or what I may be. No, it's time for me to get this thing done, and this is my moment to do it. And so we talked a little bit about that. I started out, and I went ahead and left this in because he is part of a movie as well. He had a pretty big part in it, from what I understand. Greenleaf, I'll make sure I got it right. Damn it. Hope I didn't get it wrong. Is it Greenleaf? Our man Rick Lee showed me the trailer for. Of course, Rick Lee has been in the business for a long time. Green Fever, not Green Leaf. What the hell is that talking about? Green Fever. Sorry about that, Mr. Rick Lee. I got that wrong. So Green Fever, our man Rick Lee, who actually was the first videographer at MMA Junkie. He's been around the business for a long time. He's working, you know, doing some of like the embedded stuff like that for the UFC. As well, but on the side, him and Uriah Faber was actually a part of this project as well. They put together this movie called Green Fever, and Andre Feely was in it. And I started out just as kind of an icebreaker conversation to bring it up and let him talk about it a little bit, but he ended up having some pretty amazing quotes about his time in there and about his potential future as an actor. So I thought I'd go ahead and let you guys hear that as well, and then you can also hear the focus and determination and the fire that he has in this fight. And again, I think, you know, once you hear from both these guys, you'll see that while this co-main event may not mean a lot in the rankings right now, man, I think it means a whole lot to both these guys in their careers. And again, it's a fight just like the main event that I think could be a lot of fun.
So Andre, do we have to dress you differently now that you're a big movie star? Do you want to be treated a little bit?
Yes, things are gonna have to change around here. I'm gonna demand a little more respect. I'm just kidding. No, I'll always be the same street urchin.
Well, talk about always how the project came together. I mean, you did this movie recently.
Yeah, so when you get to hang out with Uriah Faber, you get to do all kinds of cool stuff. That guy's got his hand in everything. So one of the companies that he has started, he's producing movies, and he has a production company. And there's this really cool movie that was being filmed called Green Fever. It'll be on Netflix, I believe, in next year. And they had a spot that the movie is about a home invasion that takes place on a weed farm. And so he said, oh, yeah, I got a role for a sketchy weed trimming cousin. And I said, say no more. That's me. I was born for that role. I grew up in Northern California, so like I'm very familiar with sketchy cousins who trim weed for a living. Like I had to do no homework for the role. Like I was like, oh, I was reading the script like, oh, I know these people. Like I grew up around them. This sounds like high school reunion for me. Like, so it was it was a really fun experience. I got to play a character that was fun to play and in a movie that was actually done really well. You know, you see a lot of fighters that are in movies and, you know, you've all seen it. And like, it's like the B-rate action movie where the fighter jumps in, he throws a spinning back kick, he gets shot off screen and he falls. That's it. You know, this was a movie that was really character driven. It had a really strong narrative. I have between like 5 and 7 real like talking scenes where I got to actually be a character, you know, and my character actually was important to the narrative. And so it was like a real acting job, you know, which is what I was looking for. I really enjoy acting. I really enjoy being creative in different outlets. So, it was such a rad experience and I'm looking to do it again. I got to work with a really cool production team and they kind of do a lot of in-house stuff. So they're going to be doing a bunch of other films together. So, as long as they have a sketchy cousin part in their movie, I'll be there to fill it.
I was gonna say, kind of sketchy weed trimming cousins.
The thing is, the thing about having throat tattoos is you get kind of typecast. Like, I'm never gonna get to play like young dad, like at the PTA meeting. You know what I'm saying? But I could be like the sketchy cousin, or like I could be the guy who like robs the young dad. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I think there'll always be a spot for me, but maybe typecast a little bit. We'll see.
Nice. Yeah. Let's talk about your fighting career, man. Obviously, you know, you've been in the UFC for a long time now. You're a veteran, and you've struggled to get consistent results. You got great moments, and then letdowns. So, give an idea kind of what the focus is and the thought process for where you are in your career right now.
I feel great. Everything's coming together. I feel like I'm really at the peak. I'm the best I've ever been right now, and there's definitely been ups and downs. But the thing that I've really started focusing on, especially this, I perfected maybe this past year, is just focusing on what I can actually control. You know, like people ask you questions about like your last fights or where you see yourself or your opponent's last fights or how he's performing. I don't give a shit about any of that. Like the only thing I can control is my preparation and my performance. Like I can control myself, you know, like that's hard enough. Like making sure that you do everything right. Fuck all the distractions. Like, I'm only here to make sure that I do everything that I can do to be the best fighter I can be. So I'm just zoned in, man. I'm laser sharp. Like, I'm so focused. And it's just because all I care about is my preparation and my performance, you know? I've had ups and downs, but, you know, that's the sport. That's life. That's like, how many of us have been in a situation where like, damn, my career is not going the way I want it, you know? It just so happens that in fighting, if your career's not going the way you want it, it's public and you're getting kicked in the head and shit, you know? So like, it's different than other jobs in that respect, but it's the same as anything else where you're gonna have peaks and valleys, you know? And it's not about, a big part of life I've realized is not like whether you have peaks and valleys, it's like how low you get or how high you let yourself get. It's like, you can win the biggest fight of your life, you can't celebrate too much. You can lose the biggest fight of your life, you can't have too much self-pity, man. You got to just roll with the punches, you know? Water off a duck's back, you got to shake it off.
Interesting, because you say you don't really worry too much about the other guy anymore, but I wonder what you think about Michael Johnson, because a dangerous guy, but kind of similar, right? Where he's come up short in some spots. Yeah. So, I mean, did you watch tape? Did you break him down? I mean, what do you think about it?
Yeah, I did the same thing with him that I do with most of my opponents. You know, I watch a little bit of tape. Like, I'm familiar. I'm a student of the game. Like, I've been training since I was 14, you know? Like, I've been in the game over a decade, so I've seen Michael Johnson fight a bunch. I know what he's good at, you know, but I obviously watched a little bit of tape, and then I mostly leave that. I don't study too much. I watch a little bit of tape to kind of remind myself what he's good at. Then I let my cornermen watch tape and tell me what I need to do. I trust my coaches, you know. Those dudes saved my life, so I trust them with my life, man. They tell me to do something, I do it, you know. So I let my coaches worry about really dissecting tape. For me, I already know what he's good at, and I know that if I focus on what I need to do, like, I can beat anyone in the world. Like, I'm the best 145-pound fighter in the world. Like, I've already fought the current champ. Like, if you go back and watch that fight, you'll see how close it was, you know? Like, I train with Chad Mendez, Darren Elkins, Rick Glenn, Josh Emmett. Like, you know, I train with fucking five of the top 15 guys in the world. Like, I fought the world champion. Like, I'm the best 45er in the world. Like, I know that. Like, I've got the rounds to prove it. So, I don't worry about too much of what he's bringing. I know he's dangerous. Like, I know he's dangerous. He's beaten guys like Dustin Poirier. That speaks for itself. So I know what he's going to try to do. I know he's fast. I know he's athletic. I know he's aggressive in the first. Like, he's a bad motherfucker, but I'm badder. Like, I'm the baddest motherfucker. So
nice. Last thing for me. I mean, do you feel like this is kind of a breakout opportunity? I mean, we've been following your career for a long time, and you were kind of that young kid, that next generation. Now you've been here. You know what I mean? Do you feel like now it's time to deliver?
Yeah, I think it is. I think every fight you have is the most important fight of your life, and this isn't any different. But this is a big one, and I'm just ready to perform. I've been ready, and I'm excited to show you guys.
All right, so that was a very passionate Andre Feely there. Big moment for him. I'm telling you, between this main and co-main event, I love it. I love the fights. I think they're going to be action-packed fights. And I think that, you know, the storylines of the four guys involved in it are all very intriguing, you know, and I think these are important fights for all of them. So I think these top two fights could be a lot of fun, and I think they're important to each of these four fighters, to say the least. Should also, by the way, give a shout-out to Trevor. Trevor is a friend of Andre Feely's, and Andre actually hit me up a little bit later afterwards and said, hey, my boy wanted me to give you his number. He's a big, big road show fan, so that's what's up. Shout out to Trevor. He was going to try to have him sit in with me tonight, but he had some other plans going on. So maybe one day down the road we can get Trevor to sit down and do an episode with us, man. Maybe it's better that it's not a week that his boy's fighting, because, you know, then he can be a little bit more you know, unbiased. But anyway, wanted to have him on, didn't have it. All right, let's talk about the rest of this card, because I'm telling you, I love the fights on here, and I get it. People are, this card. Okay, all right, you know, I get it. It doesn't have superstars written all over it, but I love the fights here. Courtney Casey versus Angela Hill, I think, is a big fight in the strawweight division. Angela Hill, of course, was supposed to face Alexa Grasso. Alexa Grasso had to back out. Courtney Casey stepped in. Angela said, look, I'm still excited about this fight. You know, what I liked about the Grasso fight, and she had made it clear, she was excited about that fight. And she said, you know, look, what I liked about the fight is that, you know, I know that Grasso's going to come forward and bang, and that's the kind of fight I want. So, like, that said, you know, I also think Grasso has some hype behind her. You know, she's a name that was known, you know, because of her time and Invicta and what she's accomplished in the UFC. Courtney Casey, meanwhile, does not have as much of the star name around her, but she can fight, man. She fights. And I think she's probably going to try to use wrestling and her grappling a lot more than Alexa Grasso would have, and I think that would be wise of her. But Courtney Casey's as tough as they come. Man, she has lost some heartbreaking decisions. And I've always been a fan of Courtney Casey. She did fight amateur and Tough Enough, and I got to call some of her fights. And it's always fun when you see somebody at that level and you see them continue to develop. It's hard not to kind of follow their career with a little bit of extra interest. But I think Courtney Casey's a phenomenal fighter. And I think she's been on the short end of some decisions. Now, that said, I do believe there's some tactical switches she can make. I think sometimes she lets off the gas a little bit. I think she's too comfortable fighting from her back sometimes. I think she's too comfortable fighting moving backwards sometimes. And it's good to be able to fight from those positions. But, man, you just got to realize that moving backwards and being underneath, it makes it difficult for you to win rounds in the judge's eyes. I'm not saying it's impossible. It is possible. But it does make it more challenging. You need to be the one being the aggressor. You need to be the one in top position. Judges just don't, you know, rightfully or wrongfully, they just don't reward those positions very often. So a big fight there. And I think these two ladies, you know, their records maybe don't indicate the type of skill they have and how they're developing in their career. You know, a lot of these women, and Angela said it when we were talking to her this week as well, is like, listen, man, you know, a lot of us got into the UFC earlier. You know, they added these women's divisions, and there weren't that many pro fighters around because there wasn't a place for them to make money doing it. So a lot of these women came into the UFC with smaller records than you might expect from their male counterparts. So they're having to develop right in front of your eyes, and they're having to do it on the highest stage. And I think both these ladies have done a fantastic job of developing. I think this is going to be a fun fight. Brian Barberina versus Jake Ellenberger, big fight there as well. You know, Jake Ellenberger is one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet, and he's incredibly open and honest about the struggles that he's had as of late. Very frustrated about his last loss. You know, he felt like he had more to show, and then the lights got turned off. You know, you get hit and you go down. And there's nothing you can do about it, and that's what happened there. But he got the quick turnaround. He said, listen, part of it was because I was frustrated. The other part is because I really wanted to fight in my home state, Nebraska. And as we said, the local media was really, you know, tuned in to this fight. It's a big one for him, though, man. He's got to win. And listen, he's answered the questions over and over and over, so it's not like he hasn't heard him. He gets it. This is an important fight for him. Meanwhile, Brian Barberina, a big fight for him, too, a fight that he wanted. Fight that was supposed to happen and then didn't come together, and then it was rebooked. But here's what I wanted to share about Brian Barberina, man, because this was pretty touching. You know, he was talking today and asked him a few questions, and then some of the local media was asking him quite a few questions because he's the local guy's opponent. And I happened to look down and notice that every one of his fingernails and toenails was painted, but all a different color, not just like one color. So it's not like we haven't seen fighters with painted nails. I mean, hell, Chuck Liddell, of all people, used to do it, right? So it's not out of the ordinary. But what I asked him was, hey, who picks the color scheme? Do you pick that yourself? Because it's a rainbow. Like, every finger and toe is a different color. And man, instantly, he was kind of fighting back tears. And he said, no, you know, my daughter picked it. And his daughter, they're back home. He bought, after his last fight, he bought a ranch out in rural Tennessee. And he said he's got 50 acres out there, and he's building a proper ranch. You know, he's got animals and all that stuff out there. But he used to live in Arizona. He's obviously a guy that fights out of the lab, and he used to live in Arizona. But they decided to move out and, you know, get some land and that sort of thing. But he still trains the lab. So for the first time ever, this camp, he had to leave home and go away from his kids to do his camp. And, you know, he talked about how difficult it was. It was the first time he was doing that. And his daughter, actually, he has two sons and a daughter. His daughter started kindergarten this week. So he had to miss her first week of kindergarten, which anybody that's a parent will know, you know, kind of how tough that is, man, to miss those milestones and those marks. And, you know, I just have one son, but, you know, it's tough, you know, to be away from home sometimes and, you know, to miss his daughter's first day of kindergarten. He said it was really tough on him. But he got her on FaceTime and went to the store. And she on FaceTime helped him pick out, like, what colors she wanted. And then she told him what color she wanted on each nail. And so I guess she normally does it for him, but she couldn't do it. So he had to do it himself. But he did it in the colors that she directed. So it was cool to see the emotions that he was having and just kind of battling back a little bit of tears, it felt like, as he was talking about it. So, you know, anybody that's a family man can understand missing their kids. So, I mean, again, an emotional fight here. You know, you got Jake Ellenberger, the hometown guy, who's on a string of losses, man, who needs to win to prove that he still belongs in the UFC against, you know, it's Brian Barberina, who's done well for himself and is buying this ranch. But now, you know, he's having to go away from his family for camps. And, man, it's just I love the human side of that. I love the human side. Brian Barberina, a big favorite, according to the odds makers, and I think that's probably accurate, but we'll see how it goes. Flyweight fight. I love this fight, too. Nobody's talking about this one. Deiveson Figueiredo versus John Moraga. Figueiredo, 14-0, undefeated prospect, quietly gone 3-0 in the UFC. And, you know, I've liked what I've seen out of him. You know, he's had some controversy along the way there. As well, you know, Jared Brooks thought for sure he beat him. And I think if I remember right, I might have even scored that fight for Jared Brooks, to be honest with you. I can't remember. I think I did, to be honest with you. But I still liked what I saw from Figueiredo in that fight. I just thought I didn't do enough to win that night. But I like Figueiredo a lot. I think he's got some skills. And John Moraga is tough as they come, man. He's always game to fight. You know, he's had his ups and downs. He's had some emotional moments as well. And I think he's a fun fighter to watch. He's also the guy whose name looks almost like mine in print, and who every time I see it, I truly honestly think I accidentally screwed up and did something and like accidentally pasted my name into a headline when I shouldn't have. Like I really do have like a split second of a heart attack and think that I messed something up tremendously. So it's a funny little side note there. And the main card is rounded out with Eric Anders versus Tim Williams. Of course, Eric Anders, the former football player that's become a big middleweight prospect. He lost to Lyoto Machida. I think he could have won that fight, man. I think he let off the gas a little bit when he shouldn't have. And I think he feels the same way. You know, it's a damn shame to get the loss and damn shame to miss out on an opportunity like that. But, you know, you it was to a recognizable name and you gained some experience out of it and you didn't get knocked out. By the way, I don't know if this is true or not. Maybe I shouldn't even say it, but I heard from somebody with knowledge of the situation that Lyoto Machida is getting $1.5 million a fight at Bellator. I need to try to verify that. But if so, God bless. That is a huge contract, man. Good for him. But anyway, Eric Anders, the former football player that I think at one point wants to not be the former football player. I think it's supposed to be a pretty nice piece on him on UFC Tonight this week, but I didn't get a chance to see that. Him and Nick Saban, of course, the college football coaching great. So, but he's going against Tim Williams. Tim Williams, kind of an unknown, I think, probably to most people. You know, he's on The Ultimate Fighter twice. Didn't win either of the seasons. Made it to the UFC earlier this year. Lost his debut. But I talked to him anyway. I talked to him earlier this week. I wanted to talk to Eric Anders. I hadn't talked to him in person before, so I wanted to meet him in person. And I figured, well, let's talk to his opponent too. And man, Tim Williams struck me as just a really good guy, man, and a guy that's still working full-time, doing some kind of scaffolding work, you know, construction sites and that sort of stuff, you know, carrying around iron and building scaffolding and stuff like that. And he's something that he still does full time, and he's balancing that while he chases his fighting career. But he did actually said took 4 weeks off for this fight, so it's the first time he's taken that much time off for a fight. Normally it takes like a week and a half off, and at that point, man, that last week, I mean, you're so busy with travel and weight cut and, you know, media and paperwork and all that stuff. I mean, what are you doing anyway? So this is the first time he's ever, you know, quote unquote full time, been focused on the preparation for a fight at least for 4 weeks. Now, he's got a tall order in Eric Anders, man. Eric Anders got a lot of hype around him. Even after the loss, I think a lot of people are expecting big things from Eric Anders. But, you know, I think this, again, a big middleweight matchup. I'm telling you, I like this card, man. It's not the sexiest card in terms of names or what have you, but the stories, the fights that are on the line, man, they mean something. So the prelims are in FS2. Now, it seems like stuff gets moved around sometimes, but FS2 is where these are supposed to be, so make sure you find that ahead of time. Worley Owls versus James Krause. Good fight here, man. Worley Owls, I think, is somebody that's a little bit overlooked because most of his fights have been in Brazil. Now, he does have the fight, the victory, I should say, over Colby Covington, so that's kind of a signature win there for him. I'll never forget Colby Covington, you know, walked right by me in press row after that fight, and I don't even know if he meant for other people to know. I mean, in fact, I think I might not have even reported it right at first. But Colby, you know, said he had some torn cartilage in his ribs. And so obviously that made movement very, very tough. So Colby has kind of always written that off as like, dude, I was injured and I would smoke that guy. Now, Worley Owls, meanwhile, has always said, nah, dude, I've got that win over you. And of course, Worley has been calling for that fight again, saying, hey, let me have that one back. You know, you think you should have beat me? Okay, then let's run it back. Let's do it again. So, you know, Worley at least has that in his back pocket. But, you know, he hasn't had a lot of action in the United States. So, you know, a lot of people haven't had a chance to see him fight. Now, he's on a two-fight winning streak. And man, I did an interview with him in English this week. I'd seen some post-fight stuff. I kind of remember. I've talked to him a couple times, not many. I tried to do an interview in English with him. He struggled a little bit, but it's a hell of a lot better than my Portuguese is. But he's trying to learn. He is, and he's trying to get more well known. And listen, he does say, "Look, I know I was born to be a champion. I'm going to do this. I'm going to be champion someday. And I know that, and I believe that with all my heart. And you can tell he does believe it. So, a big fight there. Meanwhile, James Krause, sat down with James Krause this week, and man, you know, I see him coaching a whole lot, and he's moving up in weight, and I don't know. A lot of that made me wonder. You know, all of a sudden you're coaching, and now you don't want to cut all the way down to where kind of your most success was, even though you've had some wins there. you know, where's your head at? What are you feeling? You know, what are you thinking? And so I had a chance to sit down and talk with James Krause, and it's kind of an in-depth conversation, but he had some of the greatest answers, and I think some of the obvious, you know, well-thought-out answers and honest answers. And so this was a conversation that we had on the first day I got here on Wednesday, and I don't know, I thought you guys might like to hear it because I think there's a lot of real truthful stuff.
All right, James, well, let's talk about Lincoln, Nebraska, first of all. I mean, it's kind of familiar grounds for you, so I wonder, I mean, does that do anything for you? I mean, when you're in a familiar environment, does it do anything for your comfort level or how you feel leading into a fight?
I mean, not really, no. I think that I drove here. It's three and a half hours for me. So I think, like, I can take more clothes, bring more stuff because I don't have to fly. I don't have to worry about the, you know, the check bag fees and all that stuff. So I guess it's more convenient. I can stop along the way of the trip, especially being at 70 and not 55. I don't have to, you know, kill myself to get the weight. So in terms of like home field advantage, I would assume that more people are going to be cheering for me than him. I've seen crazier things happen though. So
the random guy from Brazil getting the fans in Nebraska.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you mentioned the 170, man. I mean, this is kind of the big story, I think, of this fight in a lot of people's minds. Talk about the decision to go to 170, because normally when guys make changes like this, it's because they're having failures, or they're looking to reinvent something, right? Here you are having success, and you make the call anyway.
I think 55 is not hard for me to make. When I say not hard for me to make, like, I don't have difficulty cutting the weight. It's the process to get there that, you know, I'm at 1,300 to 1,800 calories a day, and that's, I mean, it's, you know, it's not fun. I walk around at 190 plus, and I'm fairly lean at that weight. You know, like, I'm not fat or anything. You know, but I think that what really did it for me, and I've had people kind of tell me this. Like, my coach has been big on it for a while now, and other people have suggested I do it as well. But for me, the moment was after my last fight when I fought Alex White. I was sitting there. I thought I won the fight. You know, I won. It wasn't pretty. I won, though. Two, arguably three of the rounds. And I was sitting there, and, you know, they're holding both of our hands, and they're about to announce the decision. And I was like, man, I don't give a damn if I win or lose. I just want to go home. You know what I mean? And that's a problem. You know what I mean? That's a problem whenever you no longer care about winning. You know, whenever you don't care about winning and losing, you're just ready for everything to be done. You know, and I think – people say that I'm different, obviously, at 70. I don't really mentally see the difference, but I'm starting to see the difference in my answers. So, for example, when somebody asks me, like, how are you feeling 5 weeks? At 55, my answer is typically, like, I'm just ready for it to be done and go back to my normal life. You know what I mean? And my answer at 70 is, like, I feel good. You know, I feel good. For the first time ever, I feel like an athlete because I've made the decision to go to 70. You know, when I fought Tom, it was at 70, but I was a 55er, just not cutting as much weight. I knew I was going to go back down, so I didn't want to lift a ton and put on a bunch of weight that I was going to have to cut anyway. But I was able to add a little bit of muscle. You know, I didn't have a ton of time to do it, but I was able to add, in my opinion, a noticeable amount of muscle. You know, it's not a ton, but it made a difference. So I think for the first time, I feel like an athlete going into a fight. And I know at 55, I don't think there's going to be very many people that are as physically dominant as me just because of my height and body mass. But at 70, I don't think I'm small, you know. I look around, I see some of the other, you know, I see Ellenberger on the card, I see Barberina on the card. I don't feel like those guys are any bigger than me, you know. I really don't. You know, Alves is a big welterweight, and I'm excited for that. You know, I look forward. I think what intrigues me most about it is whenever I face off with my opponent at 55, I usually look down on him. You know, typically lightweights 5'8", 5'9". I look down on him, and mentally in my head, I'm like, no matter what happens, you are not going to be more physically dominant than me. I'm obviously the bigger, and I feel stronger there. You know what I mean? At 70, whenever I feel like whenever I look across at Warley, whenever we finally do face off, it's going to be my brain that gets me through everything. You know, I won't be as physically dominant, so it's a new challenge to me, you know, and I really, it's kind of got me fired up, you know. It's new, and I'm excited to be here, you know, and it's something different, and I really enjoy challenges. It's kind of fired me up again, you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of got me going, so I'm excited to be at 70, and I feel like I'm gonna retire here. You know, I don't think that I'll go back to 55 ever again.
you're a student of the game, no question about it, man. Do you think this is like a mental thing that maybe athletes need to get over? Because, I mean, every fighter has the same story, right, where they hate depleting themselves. It's a grind. It takes the passion away. But everybody, I think, is afraid to give away that size or strength by moving up a division.
Yeah, it's yes. I mean, a lot of these guys come from wrestling backgrounds, typical in wrestling to do. And it's such a, you know, for me at 55 was hard because I felt like that was one of my biggest advantages. I'm so much bigger than everybody I fight. But like, are you really, does that really play, you know, let's say the 10 pounds, let's just say 10 pounds. And that's a big difference, 10 pounds in a weight class. If I'm 10 pounds heavier than the guy, I walked in my last fight at like 184, I think, at 55. So I'm big at 55, you know what I mean? Let's just say 10 pounds, even 15 pounds. But am I 10 or 15 pounds heavier and 100%? I didn't feel like I was. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I was fighting people at 55 on 80%, you know, 75%, whatever. And it was good enough. It was good enough. But I just don't, for me, it's to the point, if it takes me 2 months to get down to 55 and I fight three times a year, my 6 of the 12 months are dog shit. You know what I mean? Like, that's not a way to live. So, like, for me, I'm pretty much trading off quality of life for a little bit of weight, and it's a decision that was hard for me to make, but I'm 100% good with it. And I think once guys, like for me, the guy that really kind of got me going to it was Masvidal. Him and I fought. It was a close fight. He's very size, very similar to me, and he went up. He's doing great at 70. You know, top 10. You know, so it just tells me that it can be done. And you're seeing much more of it now. I'm drawing a blank, but you know, there's a bunch of guys doing it now. They're doing really well. So I think if we all got together, you know, and just did it, you know, I don't know the answer. I wish the UFC would do 10-pound weight classes. You know what I mean? It's crazy to me that, you know, we've been doing this for 25 years now, and the sport has evolved. The rules have evolved. The training has evolved. Everything has evolved. But nobody said, like, yo, maybe we should look at this weight class thing. You know what I mean? Like, maybe there's something to this. Like, everything else is kind of changing. Maybe we should at least look at this. Nobody's done that until now. You know what I mean? And I don't think it's even going to happen while I'm still fighting. But my hope is for the younger guys coming up, I hope it changes for them.
You touched on one thing. You talked about quality of life and decisions. I wanted to ask you, where does fighting rank for you right now in your life? Because I see you a lot in other people's corners. You know what I mean? Yeah. I see you coming for contenders fights and for other people's UFC fights. And it seems like that's something you're really passionate about, right? So where does fighting rank for you in terms of life? And of course, you're a family man as well.
Yeah, of course. When you say fighting, you mean competing? Like me personally competing?
Exactly.
Well, right now it's number one because I have a fight on Saturday. But I thoroughly enjoy – I've had a lot of fights. I've been fighting pretty consistently for 12 years, and I really, really enjoy coaching. It's a passion of mine, and I'm not done fighting yet, you know what I mean? But when I am, coaching is obviously going to be where I'm going to go. It's something that I'm super passionate about, and I feel like – I don't know – I have no idea when I'm going to be done, but I feel like the game is just going to – you know, the game is going to tell me and I'm not the guy that'll – I won't be the guy that it'll take three losses in a row. You know, it's a feeling, I think. You know what I mean? It's a feeling, and it's a drug because it's the highest highs and the lowest lows. And people chase that just like they chase meth or whatever, you know, drug of choice is. You know what I mean? It's a drug. And it's in my opinion, the most difficult sport in the world to quit. So I feel like the second that I get that hint of like – maybe you should be done, for me, that's when I'll cut it. You know what I mean? That's when I'll cut it. And I don't know when that is, but I feel like the game will tell me. And once that happens, I'm going to go, you know, I'm in coaching already, but like I'll dive even deeper into that. So, I mean, I enjoy competing, but they're very hand in hand for me right now. I love both of them very much. And it's difficult to be great at all those things, but I dedicate my life to the sport, you know, so you figure it out. You know?
No doubt. All right. Well, you got this big fight in front of you. Yeah. Give me that. Worley Isles, hardcore has been following his career. No, tough guy, right? Mm-hmm. Casuals, to be honest, probably don't know that much about him. So when you got the matchup, I mean, were you okay with it? Were you disappointed? What'd you think?
Yeah, when I first initially got the matchup, I didn't really like it. It's a tough fight. He has not much notoriety here in the States. And I said this earlier, it's not a shot on him. It's just, you know, he's a Brazilian fighter, won the Ultimate Fighter. He's got a lot of notoriety in Brazil, just not here. But after diving in deeper, you know, I look at his resume. He's got a win over Covington, Taleb, some other guys as well. He's tough, man. He's good. He's really good. He's got a great guillotine, good striking, powerful. And he's getting better. He's making adjustments along the way. You know what I mean? So for me, I really enjoy the challenge. I like kind of being – I feel like I'm like the David here and the David versus Goliath, you know what I mean? I look at him, I'm like, that's a big dude, you know? Yes, that's, I like that though, you know what I mean? And I think I'm a little bit more riled up about this fight than I normally am. You know, typically on fight week, it's like, yeah, it's another fight. I'm excited about this one. I really am. I think it's going to be a really good gauge for me to see where I'm at and in this division.
Yeah, so what's the goal here, I would ask? I mean, as you said, is it to prove to other people that you belong? Is it to prove to yourself that you belong? Is it to what is the goal here?
The goal is not to prove anybody to anything. The goal is to master my craft, do my profession that I love every day, make a lot of money doing it, and use that money to make money elsewhere and get the hell out. You know what I mean? Like, I see some of these guys, golly. I see some of these guys, the older guys that they couldn't quit the sport. They couldn't quit the drug. I see these guys that can't even tie their damn shoes, man. Like, you know what I mean? They can't even form complete sentences sometimes. And I don't want to be that guy. You know what I mean? Like, I want to be the guy that quits one fight too early than one fight too late. You know what I mean? Like, I'll be on the early end. I'm telling you, I will. And, it's the money, you know what I mean? It's easy money. It really is, because essentially, you know, it's the easiest money I've ever made in my life. You know, I have to train hard and all that stuff, but I train hard anyway. I train hard without a fight. So I've said this 1,000 times. Typically, your MMA fighters come from low-income families or broken homes or both, you know? And it's just like, wait a second, you're paying me this to fight? Cool, okay. I don't want to be that guy that, like, I can't even hold a conversation with somebody. I don't want to be the guy that has a hard time tying their shoes, getting out of bed in the morning. Like, I just don't – you can't let the sport take your life away. You know what I mean? I dedicate my life to it, but the sport will never take my life, if that makes any sense at all. And I just don't think that's the right way to do things. And I think there's so much more to life than this. You know, this doesn't last long. 10 years, 15 years. If you live to be 80, that's, you know, a small portion of your life.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, not trying to rush you out the door, but are there things you want to accomplish before you do call it a career? I mean, do world titles mean anything to you? Do certain matchups, your legacy, any of that mean anything to you?
I'm about to piss my coach off, but I don't care about titles. I don't care about rankings. The rankings are bullshit anyway. They're irrelevant to me. I want to make money. Have fun. I want to have fun. I love this process. I'm addicted to the process. I'm addicted to the challenge. I want to win. You know what I mean? Like, I want to win, obviously. So, like, when we say like titles and winning, they're the same thing. Like, I don't want to lose. Like, nobody wants to lose. So, of course, I'm trying to challenge myself. And I think doing that on a regular basis is important, especially for me wanting to dive into coaching when I'm done. Like, I need to be a part of this. You know what I mean? I have to know what it's like. I think some of the best coaches in the game train with their guys. You know, you have to be evolving with the sport. You have to feel it. You can't just see it. It's not just visual. You have to feel what's going on. And I want to compete. I want to make money. I want to win. And I want to have fun. I've been doing this for a long time, man. You got to have fun. You got to smell the roses along the way.
Yeah, no doubt, man. Well, I appreciate all the honesty. How do you see this fight going, man, as you play this thing out in your head? I mean, Orly, as you said, tough guy, you know, got some great grappling, he's got some power, maybe some cardio issues from time to time. Yeah. So, I mean, when you play this thing out in your head, how do you see it going?
Yeah, I think it's going to be – I think that's all dependent on how he plays it out. You know, if you watch my last fight, he tries to pressure me. That's a black and white statement. Like, you need to finish me in the first round or I'm coming in round two and three. And especially me jumping up, my cardio is going to be better. You know, I have very minimal weight cut. I think total I'll be 15-ish pounds, you know, but like I'm way lower than that now. But I think if he, as of late, he's tried to kind of improve on those cardio issues. So he's starting a little bit slower. And I think if he does that, we'll be kickboxing for a while. You know what I mean? And he's good on the ground. He's got a great guillotine. I have a great guillotine. You know, I'm good on the ground too. So I think a lot of it's going to be where he's at in the cardio department. You know what I mean? Like I feel like in order for him to win, he needs to finish me. You know, I truly believe that. And I'm not an easy guy to finish.
All right, so James Krause admitting, you know, that he does consider what's next, but he still has a lot of passion for what's here, and I just love the way he phrased stuff. You know, like, I'm not gonna let this game keep me around longer than it should, and you know, talking about how it's easy money. What's kind of funny here is say this is the easiest money I've ever made. I mean, you think about what these guys do for a living, it's crazy. But it is the money does come in nice chunks, you know. Takes a while to work up there. You know, you're not making a ton of money right off the bat, but you know, it does start to add up a little bit as you move your way through the ranks. So interesting to see what happens there. Listen, I seriously could break down every fight on this card. I love it. Yuri Alcantara versus Corey Sandhagen. Marcus Perez versus Andrew Sanchez. Marcus Perez, he looks like a dangerous dude, man. I think he's still a little bit raw around the edges, but I love it. Andrew Sanchez, hilarious. I walked to my first guy here the other day. I needed to go use the restroom real quick because I had just taken that Uber from Omaha. And I go into the bathroom, and he's in the bathroom, which is like, I don't know, it looked like a single blade razor just touching up his beard. It was hilarious. He's in there. I don't think he had any shaving cream, man. He was doing real man style, just some hot water and a single blade razor, like trying to trim up his neck a little bit because it was time for his photos. And he's like, I don't know, I didn't think about it. He's like, I never shaved. So that was my first greeting with Andrew Sanchez this week. Mickey Gall versus George Sullivan. Mickey Gall, I still think he's somebody to watch, man. I do. I think he's talented, and I think he's going to continue to develop. I know he's just coming off a loss, but I think he's still somebody to keep an eye on. I was really surprised he was on the FS2 prelims here. You know, he's moved out to the West Coast. He's training with different people just to kind of keep getting new looks. Had an interview with him earlier this week, too, that's on YouTube if you want to check it out. But I still think he's somebody you want to keep an eye on. And interesting, you know, George Sullivan, you know, I thought, hey, you know, is this somebody you knew much about? And he said, yeah, you know, George Sullivan, I knew him a lot, man. He came from my local scene, and I watched him all the time, man. He was a local champion in my area, and he was a guy that I kind of looked up to and said, I'm going to be that guy someday. And now he's fighting him. So, you know, potential kind of passing of the torch type fight. The fight pass prelims, I love the fight pass prelims. Joanne Calderwood versus Kalindra Fajia in the featured one there. JoJo basically living out in Vegas now. I had a chance to speak to her. She's been out there since March, training at the Performance Institute, training with Syndicate MMA as well. So she's made a lot of changes to her diet, to her lifestyle, and believes that it's finally all come together. She's also getting a fight at 125, which she always used to look miserable trying to make 115, but 135 was obviously too big for her. So she finally gets to fight in that 125 sweet spot. She thinks this is going to be a fun week. So I like that. Drew Dober versus John Tuck. John Tuck, by the way, Brian Ortega out here rolling with John Tuck all week. Tuck rolls with him quite a bit. So anxious to see that fight. And then Luke Sanders versus Hani Yahya is, I think, potentially a fun fight as well stylistically. You know, Luke has some skills, but has had some setbacks. Hani Yahya, a guy who's been fighting forever and is a specialist, to say the least, man. He does, you know, one thing tremendously well. But, man, the guy's been doing it forever. So, I'll quit bothering you, but I like this fight card. I do. I got fingers crossed, man. I think it's going to be a fun one. Listen, I did want to say one thing real quick. Bellator 204 was last week. I enjoyed it. The story was definitely, all in terms of clicks, was James Gallagher all week long. No traffic about it, or no question about it. Biggest traffic guy by far, despite the fact that Darren Caldwell, a champion, was there, and despite the fact that he was trying to start a two-title run of his own, it was James Gallagher leading in. And it was James Gallagher leading out, man. And people took a lot of pride in him getting knocked out. And I don't know. I just want to say I respect James Gallagher. I really do, for throwing it out there, man. The young kid, and a lot of people say, oh, he's just a Conor McGregor clone, and maybe that's true, you know, but there's a lot worse people to pattern yourself after if you've worked side by side with him, man. You've seen the successes that he's had both in the cage and in the financial realm as well. So I respect Gallagher for putting it out there, man, for being that cocky guy, for being that brash guy. I know it rubs some people the wrong way, and I totally get why, but it makes people tune in. It's no guts, no glory. You know what I'm saying? You got to put yourself out there in order to get people to care about you. And that doesn't mean you have to talk trash. It doesn't mean you have to act the way he does. But you got to do something. You got to put yourself out there. And he did that. And a lot of people reveled in his defeat. And I think that's okay, too. I won't tell you not to do that. I mean, if he's willing to try to rub you the wrong way, I think it's your right as a fan, especially, to revel in bask in the glory when he does lose. But I just would say, you know, I guess still try to have some healthy respect for him. Even if you enjoy seeing him lose, have some respect for what he's doing. Have some respect for the guts that he has, not just to get in the cage, but to put himself out there like that. Because in order to get that notoriety, especially, you know, Bellator, you know, they've got to try even harder. They've got less of a spotlight than the UFC does. And for him to get the kind of numbers that he was getting and to get the kind of attention he was getting, you know, he's got a bright future ahead of him. He's got a lot of time left. And man, Bandejas as well. I like that kid, man. He handled the business. I liked him. So I don't want to take away anything from Bandejas, who deserves a ton of credit and a ton of shine as well. But I just want to say I respect James Gallagher for putting himself out there like that. So anyway, listen, I've been rambling long enough. You're probably tired of hearing my voice, and I'd like to go have some frosty beverages. Well, some more frosty beverages. I am having a little Coors Light here in the room this evening. But I'm going to run downstairs and have a frosty beverage or two, and then early weigh-ins tomorrow. No ceremonial weigh-ins, but we'll have all that stuff at MMA Junkie. So we will keep everything rolling along here in Lincoln, Nebraska. And let me just say to all of you, thanks for listening. We'll be right back.